the mountains fall to the sea,
to the sea.
Though the waters may roar and the mountains may shake,
I know that He will take care of me.
God is our refuge and strength. God is our refuge and strength. Always present in time of trouble, God is our refuge and strength.
He breaks the bow and He shatters the spear. A mighty fortress is He.
Refuge and strength. God is our refuge and strength. Always present in time of trouble. God is our refuge and strength. Refuge and strength. God is our refuge and strength.
Can you open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 3? We will refer to that this morning as Proverbs chapter 3 and perhaps the third proverb as well. It is not the third proverb, but it is the third chapter of Proverbs. It is the year 2022. I wrote that for the first time while I was preparing the lesson for today. It says it right there at the top of this page, 2022. It's the first time I wrote that. Do you remember when the year 2000 came along? Most of us in this room were here then. There was great concern over the Y2K problems that everyone expected. You remember that? Everyone thought the world was going to come to a sudden stop because evidently there was concern over whether computers would be able to read a date that had three zeros in it. What would that mean? How would that affect all of the computer systems in the world? And well, all of that came and went with very little fanfare. A lot of those concerns were unrealized, and praise the Lord for that. But here we are 22 years later wondering what kind of things we will be concerned about this year. In the past 2 years, we've had some very strange occurrences. The past 2 years have been filled with the focus on COVID and all things associated with that. In some way, that virus has impacted all of us. We lost a dearly loved member of our church family because of that virus. Others in the church family have been made quite ill because of it. Others had it and got it, got all over it, but still struggle with it, at least to some degree. Paula went in to see the doctor just, last week or so, and had a strange kind of rash-looking kind of thing on the palm of her hand or the inside of her thumb there, and doctor looked at it and says, well, that's COVID. It just shows up that way. And other ways as well, according to the medical profession. For some people, it may be a rash or something like that. For others, it's just a pain in their joints or a continuing cough or whatever. And they actually have a term for it. They call it long COVID. And it's still around. What will the coming year bring? We've already been told that gas prices are going to go way up in the next few months. That means that everything else will cost more. Inflation will certainly continue as a result of that, and government spending and so on and so on. And masks, we are told, may be around for a long time, at least for those who choose to wear one. And they're already, I don't know why they, there must be a lot of medical research kinds of things in Israel. But I don't know if you've noticed that, but a lot of the things that we're hearing come out of Israel. And evidently, there are a lot of, like I said, medical experts and so on there. But they're already telling us that if you have not received your shot, you need to receive your shot. And if you have not already had the booster, you need to get the booster. And be prepared for booster number 3, 4, 5, and 6. According to these people, it's coming. Okay. That's the thing, kind of thing that we're told as we enter into a new year. Not very positive kinds of things, but there are a lot of positive things as well. Many people look at the new year as a time to set goals, and I asked people a little bit ago about making resolutions. Some people make resolutions. They resolve to make adjustments in their lives, and there's certainly nothing wrong with doing a little self-examination periodically. We probably all ought to do that, making desirable changes and making worthwhile goals. But we often focus on pretty temporal things when we make New Year's resolutions. I don't know if that applies so much to this group, but as a culture, and you can go on the internet and you can look up the lists of the 10 most popular New Year's resolutions, those kinds of things. And most of those things are pretty predictable. They're pretty much the same year after year after year. But most of them are pretty predictable. And most of those lists could be divided into maybe 3 or 4 categories. There are those things we resolve to do in the area of health and fitness that would hopefully make us live longer and feel better. There are those things we resolve to do that focus on financial concerns, like saving more, spending less. There are those things we resolve to do on a more social side of life, such as spending more time with family and friends. There are perhaps others that focus more on, and this could apply to those first three, I suppose, but more on self-improvement on a more intellectual level. Learn a new language. It's amazing how many people make a resolution, I'm going to learn a new language this year, or I'm going to take a course at the local college or whatever. Those are the kinds of things that people make resolutions about. And there's nothing particularly wrong with any of those kinds of things. Some of them are could be very beneficial, and we would probably benefit by doing some of those things. But as believers, we should ask what God wants to do with us and through us in the year to come. The spiritual side of life is something that most lists of New Year's resolutions totally ignore. Again, that's probably not true of this group, but culturally speaking, that's true. I received something via email a few years ago that I thought I would share with you this morning as we consider how resolutions could change our lives. I thought this was a pretty good little thing when I read it, and like I said, I've found it some years ago, and I shared it with you some years ago, but I'm going to share it with you again. A man decided, we could say he resolved, a man resolved that he would change the world, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change the country, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change the state, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change his community, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change his neighborhood, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change his family, but he was not successful. So he resolved to change himself, and he succeeded. As a result, his family changed, and they affected their neighborhood. And the people of the neighborhood changed, and they affected their community. And the people of the community changed, and they affected their state. And the people of the state changed, and they affected their country. And the people of the country changed, and they affected the world. Proverbs chapter 3. We'll spend just a few moments here this morning. We considered this proverb and some lessons we can learn from it several years ago, been quite a while ago. So we come to it again, and I don't feel any particular angst in doing that kind of thing, since we've been in Peter's letters, and Peter tells us quite plainly that we need to be reminded. So we're in Proverbs chapter 3. Like I said, we've been here before, but it's been several years since we were here. We are going to consider this chapter briefly this morning, going through it very quickly, but looking at it as potentially resolutions for the year we are entering into. And these are things that are coming from the wisest man who ever lived, supposedly. That's how we often think of Solomon. There is some discussion as to who actually wrote some of the Proverbs. Are they all truly from Solomon, or did other people write them? Well, some other people probably did write some of the Proverbs, but we will assume this morning, along with the many, many Bible scholars, that the third proverb is indeed written by Solomon. Solomon begins this chapter of wisdom with a very matter-of-fact statement. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments, for length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Are not most resolutions made with the intent of somehow increasing our chances of gaining knowledge, prosperity, longevity, tranquility, the things the Proverbs teach us about? Solomon tells his son and us in our turn that being committed to the teaching and the commandments found in this collection of Proverbs will lead us exactly to those things, and we could add to much more as well. There's great wisdom in this psalm. We just read the first two verses. If you would skip over to the last three verses, Proverbs 3, verses 33, 34, and 35, the curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. So though he scoffs at the scoffers, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. At least part of what Solomon has to say about the wicked or the foolish in this proverb, as well as others, is that they ignore wise teachings. They even scoff at them. But the righteous or the wise are those who put them into practice. The wicked will be cursed, but the righteous will be blessed. So he gives us in this proverb 10 principles, at least that's how we're going to look at it, 10 principles, 10 proverbial statements that we should live by. Most of them are rather simple in their teaching, but often very difficult in their application. That's why we set ourselves up for failure many times. We resolve to do something that seems very simple when we first make the resolution, but in the application of it, if the implementation of it, it's not as easy as we thought it would be. And that's true of many of the things we find in the Proverbs. It all sounds really good at the beginning, makes sense and everything, but it's hard to apply these things at times. If we would resolve to live by these, they have the potential of changing our lives and perhaps even changing the world. We'll go through them quickly and hopefully gain some insight. Verses 3 and 4. And you will notice that most of these are in the form of couplets. A statement of wisdom. Here's the proverbial statement, a statement of wisdom, followed by a comment concerning the instruction given or what might be gained if one would actually put it into practice. Verses 3 and 4, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Now that's the statement, that's the proverbial statement. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. Then we have the what we might gain from that, if you will. So you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. That sounds pretty simple, but it's not as simple as we make it sound sometimes. The NIV uses the terms love and faithfulness. The King James says, mercy and truth. Do not let idleness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, so you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Verses 3 and 4. Those are things we ought to do. Again, the NASB, do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Don't let kindness and truth. The NIV uses the terms love and faithfulness. King James says mercy and truth. And if Paula would whip out her 25 other translations that she has on her electronic device, we would probably find other terms used there to translate Hebrew words into English. But the Hebrew words are hesed and emeth, two terms that are translated into many and various English words that speak of these characteristics that are truly godlike, being constant in our commitments, loyal, faithful, reliable, loving, showing a strong sense of duty and responsibility, graciousness. Those things are all tied up in those two words, hesed and emeth. Those who emulate those characteristics will find favor with both God and man. To quote a popular song by, of all people, Glen Campbell from several years ago, if you see your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way. You've got to try a little kindness. Show a little kindness. Just shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you'll overlook the blindness of narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded streets. Don't walk around the down and out. Lend a helping hand instead of doubt. And the kindness that you show every day may help someone along their way. You've got to try a little kindness, show a little kindness. Shine your light so everyone can see. And if you try a little kindness, then you'll overlook the blindness of narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded streets. In a world full of evil, hatred, strife in various forms, wouldn't it be nice if we could all just show a little kindness? Proverbs 3 says, do not let kindness and truth leave you. That might be a good thing for us all to pursue this year. Verses 5 and 6. Many of us have committed those verses to memory. Most of us did that when we were little children. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. The command or the statement, what we ought to do, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. And if you do that, in all your ways acknowledge him, he will make your paths straight. How do we define, resolution number 2, trust in the Lord with all your heart. How do we define trust? That's another one of those words that's kind of difficult to define at times. Firm belief, confidence, complete reliance, confident expectation. When our confidence is in God, when we acknowledge him in all our ways and put those things into practice, he will give direction to our lives. We will have his blessing. Verses 7 and 8, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Resolution number 3, trust in God's wisdom. Fear him, turn from evil. How do we know God's wisdom? How do we learn to fear him? How do we know what the evil is we're supposed to avoid? Well, by knowing God, by knowing about him, by knowing his character, by knowing his teaching, prayer, Bible study, submission, yielding to the Spirit, seeking godly counsel, doing all those things that are the disciplines of the Christian life. If we do those things, we can expect a healthier life, a happier life. How many evils, how many diseases are brought upon us due to the abandonment of God's wisdom and pursuing evil rather than turning from it? We know that sickness and death was introduced into this world due to the sin of Adam and Eve. But is every disease, every difficulty in life the result of some specific sin or act of rebelliousness toward God? That seems to be the position Job's wife and his friends held. That is the position held by those who knew the man born blind, John chapter 9. Who sinned that he's this way? Was it he or his parents? Who sinned? Who sinned that cause this to happen? Well, not every malady of life is caused by some specific sin or act of rebelliousness, but many of them are. Trust in God's wisdom, fear him, and turn from evil. Verses 9 and 10, honor the Lord from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. Honor God with your wealth. Honor God with your possessions. As we honor God and use what he has given us to in his service, he honors us in return. How do you spend your money? How do we use those things that we have possession of? Do we practice stewardship? Stewardship within the Christian context, the Christian understanding, is the practice of the concept that everything truly belongs to God. We are mere stewards of his possessions, and as such, they're to be used for his glory. Verse 9 refers to the law of first fruits. Give to the Lord of your best, not what is left over after every other desire of your life is filled. Make him priority number one in every area of life, even with your worldly possessions, and he will bless you. Seek first his kingdom, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6. Seek first his kingdom, and all the other things will fall into place. Verses 11 and 12, we're going through these very quickly. Verses 11 and 12, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves, even as a father, the son in whom he delights. Resolution number 5, don't despise the Lord's discipline. Maybe you're going through a difficult time in life right now. Maybe the Lord's trying to teach you something through those difficulties. James and Paul both tell us in their New Testament letters that the trying of our faith is used to strengthen us and help us grow. That's hard to believe when we're going through those times, isn't it? How in the world's God going to use this to better me, to make me more reliant? How is he going to do that? Well, those aren't easy answers to come up with at times. But are we going to let the difficulties of life make us bitter or make us better? And sometimes those are very difficult things to deal with. The problems of life. We mentioned earlier the things those people down there south of Boulder are dealing with. And how in the world could that be something that can make them stronger, make them better? Somehow God will use these things for those who are committed to him, to his glory. Be reminded that at least some of those things come to make us better, not bitter. Do not despise your time of discipline. Learn from it. Maybe God's trying to teach you something. Resolution number 6. It's covered by the next 10 or 12 verses, and we'll read through them very quickly. But here he speaks of wisdom and our pursuit of it. He personifies wisdom by referring to it using feminine pronouns. It's rather interesting that he refers to wisdom as she instead of he, but that's how it is in the text. This entire collection of wise sayings are in the category of what we call wisdom literature. When we categorize the books of the Bible, we put books like Psalms and Proverbs particularly in this category that we call wisdom literature. Why do we do that? Because they are written to make us wise. Verses 13 through 24, how blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For its profit is better than the profit of silver and its gain than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. Now remember, this is speaking of wisdom. Wisdom, verse 18, wisdom, is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps were broken up and the skies drip with dew. My son, let them not depart from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and adornment to your neck. Then you will walk in your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Are you living out all of those things? I'm not. I'll readily admit that. Be committed to finding wisdom and gaining understanding. The implication is that this is a pursuit. It takes effort, it takes diligence, it takes discipline. In these several verses that we just read, Solomon explains some of what he means by that, by this wisdom. Wisdom is worth pursuing. It is a good thing to gain. What are the benefits of such a pursuit? Well, verse 14, it's better than silver and gold. Verse 15, it's better than jewels. Verse 16, in her hands, wisdom hands, are long life, riches, and honor. Verse 17, her ways are pleasant and her paths are peace. Verse 18, she is a tree of life that produces happiness. Verses 19 and 20, wisdom and understanding are God-like characteristics. And he uses how God acted by the Lord by wisdom founded the earth. So God even applies wisdom. Verse 21, pursue them and keep them. Don't let them go. Verse 22, they bring life. Verses 23 and 24, they bring security and contentment. Be committed to finding wisdom, pursuing it. Verses 25 and 26, do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Resolution number 7, don't be afraid. You ever get afraid? I could have walked around with that microphone this morning and instead of asking, do you make resolutions, do you ever get afraid? I think if we were really honest, we would all have to admit that there are times when we do. When we do. It seems to be just part of life in this world. I look around at the world we live in and I get afraid at times. There are many things in this life that cause me to become fearful, but what do the scriptures teach about that? God is our confidence. He is our protection. He is our salvation. What was the title of the song the quartet just sang? He is my refuge and strength. Those are things that we are taught in the Word of God. He is our salvation. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Psalm 27. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High shall abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge, my fortress, my God, in whom I trust. Psalm 91. The Lord is your confidence. Here, Proverbs 3, verse 26. Those are hard things to put into practice. We read them. We say we are committed to them. The Lord is my refuge and strength, my rock, my salvation. All those wonderful, the Psalms are full of statements like that. We read them and we, hooray, God, victory in Jesus. But it's not always easy to practice those things, is it? We are human beings living in a fallen world, and we recognize that there are many things in this world that could do us harm. And so there are times when we become fearful. God says, don't be afraid, trust in me. Verses 27 and 28, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Don't say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I'll give it, when you have it with you. The needs are so great. Resolution number 8, you can't change the world, but do what you can. How many of you saw the Sunday Has Come that I sent out this morning earlier? You can go to your email and check it out when you get home. Dream Small was the title of the video that I sent out. Dream small. We get so concerned about so many big things that we often forget the little things that we may be able to impact if we just have eyes that will see. The needs are so great. It has been said that people in this country suffer from sensory overload. Every other commercial on TV is a request for you to help someone or something in need. Just send in $19 a month and you can help the Jewish widows in Russia. Or you can save the polar bears in Alaska. Or you can help find a cure for childhood cancers. Or you can save a starving puppy. Every time those advertisements come on with the showing the little dogs out in the cold and shaking, so Paula says, shut that off, I can't stand to watch that. Sensory overload. There are so many needs. among humans, among the earth, the care of the earth, etc., etc. You can just send in your $19 a month, and you can help a disabled veteran. And the list goes on and on and on. It is an endless thing, an endless list of things that we are called upon to be involved in some way or another. You can't change the world, but do what you can. We can't all respond to all of those kinds of things. We can't all send in a bunch of money, but we can do what we can. Start out in your neighborhood, somebody in your neighborhood that just needs a little cheering up once in a while. You know, we have discovered that just taking a loaf of bread, fresh-baked cookies, of course, those don't normally leave our house, but taking things like that to a neighbor can be very beneficial in ways we may never even think of, but it can happen. It can have a major impact. I get numerous calls here at the church from people in need. It's interesting. You would think that the last 2 years, because of all the COVID concern and all the things associated with that, I would think that I would have received more of these kinds of calls this year, but the last couple of years, but I've probably received fewer of them in the last couple of years, but they still come. And that's fine. I get numerous calls from here at the church from people in need. And every time I receive one of those calls, I kind of say, that's a great thing. Who should you be reaching out to in time of need? The body of Christ, the local church. I have found that a lot of these people who call needing some help have absolutely nothing to do with church. Most of them are kind of bitter toward church. But yet they find, I can't go anywhere else, so I call a church. Well, can you help me with my rent? Can you help me pay my electric bill? I need help with this. I need help with that. And I have to admit that I don't know what to do in most of those cases. When I can, I try to find out as much as I can about the situation. There are times when you can find more information. You can't always do that. I ask questions. I make an attempt to determine if the person I'm talking to is being honest with me. And then if possible, I as the pastor, we as a church family, through me at times, help in whatever way we can. Some of these cases, when you talk to these people or go meet them somewhere, some of them just bring you to tears. Some very sad situations. Some of them are scams. And I don't have a drawer full of money, though I do maintain a small amount of cash, and I have some gift cards for Safeway and King Soopers to be used to help those who are in need. And there are times when I can give the person calling a bit of encouragement and maybe make some suggestions or give them some direction or whatever. There are times when I meet people somewhere and help them by filling their car up with gas or by giving them a bag of groceries. There are occasions when we as a church family, you included in this, have provided a room in a local motel for a night or two for someone in need. We've done that on several occasions through the years. And I feel extremely inadequate in those kinds of situations, as I'm sure you do as well. We're not solving their problem when we fill up their car with gas. That's probably not dealing with the root problem at all. But maybe it's helping a little bit. Maybe it's helping a little bit. Well, maybe that's all right in a lot of cases. We even had a man in need stay here in the church building for a few days not long ago because he had no place else to stay. I feel extremely inadequate in these kinds of situations, and it's not uncommon for all of us to see people standing on street corners holding up signs saying they need help. We see them all over the place. Matthew 26:11, the words of Jesus, there will always be the needy among you. And they are. They are always among us. But what a pleasure, this is the other side of this coin, I guess. What a pleasure it is for me when someone in the church family gives me an envelope with some money in it and says, give this to so-and-so. I know she needs some help right now. Or I was visiting with so-and-so in the store the other day and I saw that they were pretty picky about what went into their cart. Here, give them this King Soopers card. Maybe it'll help. It's good to see the members of the body of Christ helping one another. But the needs out there are so great. Galatians 6:10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto those who are of the household of faith. As I said, there have been times when I've met people at the gas station, put gas in their car, when they've been passing through town, needed some help. We've purchased groceries, we've given them money sometimes when they have particular needs. And sometimes when you do that, it's amazing to me. Sometimes you do that and the people you're trying to help out just have this attitude of you owed them that $20 bill, that gift card to King Soopers, that tank of gas, whatever. And some people are just amazed and humbly thankful for the fact that there's somebody who actually would show them a little kindness. I'm reminded of the story of the young man who was walking along the beach picking up starfish that had washed on the tide, picking them up, throwing back into the water. The beach went on for miles, and there were starfish by the hundreds that would die if they did not get back into the water immediately. Someone came walking along, seeing what he was doing, and ridiculed the man for taking the time to make what seemed to be a useless effort. You cannot save them all, he said. What difference does it make anyway? The man reached down and picked up another starfish and tossed it into the water and then commented, it made a difference to that one. We may not be able to change the world, but we must do what we can. Verses 29 and 30. Do not devise harm against your neighbor while he lives in security beside you. Do not contend with a man without cause, if he has done you no harm. Resolution number 9, don't plan to do evil. Don't plan to do harm to others. Don't try to take advantage of someone in need. There are an awful lot of unscrupulous people in the world today. There are charlatans and swindlers of every kind. Don't be numbered among them. Which leads us right to the final resolution that we might say, verses 31 and 32. Do not envy a man of violence. Do not choose any of his ways. For the crooked man is an abomination to the Lord, for he is intimate, but he is intimate with the upright. Don't envy the ways of the wicked. God knows your heart, but he also knows your deeds. There's a list of some things for us to be reminded of, perhaps consider as we start a new year. The Proverbs are full of such things, but this proverb just seems to have that grouping of these comments, these proverbial statements that would make for good resolutions. Be committed to kindness and truth. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Trust in God's wisdom. Fear him. Turn from evil. Honor God with your wealth, with your possessions. Do not despise the Lord's discipline. Be committed to finding wisdom and understanding. Don't be afraid. You can't change the world, but do what you can. Do not plan something evil. Do no harm to others. Do not envy the ways of the wicked. If you're in the habit of making New Year's resolutions, there are some good ones, some good ideas for each one of us to apply in our lives.